A Brief History of the Holy Roman Empire. The First Crusade, Part 3, Byzantium and the Byzantine Empire. Now, the real armies of the Crusade were made up of five different groups. They were led by Hugh of Vandenbois, Godfrey of Bouillon, Behemoth of Veronto, Raymond of Toulouse, and Robert of Normandy. Each of these men was renowned and respected in their realms. Hugh was the brother of King Philip of France, Godfrey the hero of Henry IV's army. Bohemond was the son of Richard Guiscard, and Robert was the son of William the Conqueror. Hugh's troops were the first to leave. The Crusades had been the first proclaimed in France, where the Council of Clermont occurred, and King Philip's brother was the first to pledge himself to the cause. He set sail for Constantinople by ship in October of 1096, the same year Peter the Hermit's peasant army was falling on the Turks. The ships encountered a storm and were wrecked, but most survived. The soldiers of Hugh were well-disciplined, and there were no reports of serious raiding or pillaging. Hugh was well-received and showered with gifts by the Eastern Emperor Alexius Comnenus, who had his own motives. Alexius was well aware that the presence of so many foreign soldiers in his country could easily backfire, something which actually happened in the Fourth Crusade. He had himself been invaded by Robert Guiscard just years earlier. He therefore asked Hugh to pledge his loyalty to himself and to promise that all land which would be captured by the Turks would be returned to the sovereignty of the Byzantine Empire. He did not require that the Holy Romans could not establish lands beyond the old empire, for this would create a buffer between the Byzantines and the Turks, to which Comnenus would have absolutely no objection. Hugh gladly pledged his fealty and waited for the arrival of the other armies. Godfrey of Bouillon's troops were the second to arrive. Godfrey had been one of the great heroes of Henry IV in the war with Rudolf, and it was he who had cut off Rudolf's hand and thus given the blow that would kill Rudolf. He was acclaimed by friends and foes alike as a man of great honor and chivalry. While some modern scholars have questioned some of his motives and actions, it seems that his motives were never questioned even by his contemporary enemies. He was devoted to the church, but not to the Pope. His allegiance with Henry IV, therefore, did not put him at odds with Urban II, though he may have believed Clement was the true Pope. This must be understood, for the Crusades extended far beyond the question of Urban's legitimacy and was first, in fact, and character Godfrey, except for Raymond of Toulouse, was the most chivalrous and noble. His knights sometimes complained that he spent so long in giving thanks to God for dinner that dinner was cold by the time he was finished. Like Charlemagne before him, he was a devout and sincere man, but he was still a warrior at heart. He was a man of his word, but his word was not easily given. He was a rigid soldier whose virtues were offset by his German blood and temperament. Godfrey sold all that he had and took his wife and children with him. He did not expect to return, but hoped to establish his home in Jerusalem. Following him on the crusade was his brother Baldwin, whose character was less noble. Since Godfrey came from Germany, the shortest route was through Hungary, but Hungary had already had five armies enter through its borders, and none left without pillaging and destruction. King Coloman was reluctant to grant the right of way, but upon meeting Godfrey, came to trust him. He agreed to let the army pass, but only if Baldwin's family was surrendered as prisoners. Baldwin and his family were to be released only after Godfrey's men had passed through to the Byzantine Empire. Godfrey agreed and sternly warned his soldiers that death would be the punishment for raids. All went well, and Godfrey's troops entered in the Byzantine territory peaceably. It was December, a year after the call of the Crusades, when Godfrey's troops heard rumors that Hugh was kept a prisoner. If he was a prisoner, he was a prisoner in a gilded cage, but the men assumed the worst. For over a week, the army ransacked and wreaked havoc upon the countryside. Messengers from Constantinople arrived and convinced Godfrey that all was well. He restored order to his troops and continued on to Constantinople, where he met up with Hugh. When there, Comnenus tried to make Godfrey pledge loyalty, as you had done, but Godfrey refused, saying that he had given his pledge to Henry IV. Discussions continued for some time, but Baldwin had been left in charge of the army in Godfrey's absence. Again, trouble erupted in April of Holy Week, and a battle broke out between Baldwin's men and the Byzantine troops. Soon order was restored, and Godfrey agreed to give his pledge to Comnenus so long as it did not conflict with his pledge to Henry IV. Bohemond arrived almost immediately thereafter. Bohemond was the son of Robert Guiscard and had warred with his brother over the possession of Guiscard's domain. He now pledged himself to the cause of the crusade and set sail with his nephew, Tancred, for Byzantium in October. Like his father, Bohemond's Viking blood still boiled. He was a pretentious knight who set his own personal ambition above the church, but he had the prestige and respect that few other knights could command. He did not have the good of the church or Christianity at heart, and many of the knights wished that he had never come. Like his father, he could quickly be excessively cruel and barbaric, as well as treacherous. He was quick to take an oath of loyalty to Alexis, but only because the oath meant nothing to him. The other crusaders were by no means quick to take an oath of loyalty, that once they gave it, they kept it. Such scruples and ethics did not interfere with Bohemond, who once ordered spies roasted on a spit and cooked for dinner. Nevertheless, Bohemond was a politician and knew when to behave civilized as well as when to be barbaric. After their arrival in Byzantine lands, Bohemond ordered that no pillaging should occur. There was, however, one notable exception. When the army passed the town of Paulican heretics, Bohemond doubtless remembered Urban II's words when he declared heresy punishable by death. The Paulicans, who were a dualistic sect that amongst other things believed that Satan was Jesus' brother. This was more than enough to incur Bohemond's wrath. The Paulicans were burned in their houses, and then the troops moved in. Two other armies remained before the forces were assembled. Raymond IV had traveled with his ally, the Bishop of Lisieux. Robert, the Duke of Normandy, was the commander of the final army. He was the son of William the Conqueror and had inherited the Norman duchy, but his brother William II of England had attacked his lands many times, claiming it was part of his English inheritance. When the Crusades began, Robert made amends with his brother and sold the duchy to William II in order to finance his expedition. Of these last two armies, Raymond's troops seemed to be the most undisciplined, and several skirmishes occurred in Byzantium. As the actions of his army displayed, Raymond was not a great general, but he was the most noble and chivalrous of the knights of the Crusade. When civility and humanity abandoned the Crusaders for greed and revenge, Raymond was the usual voice of reason, along with Bishop Lisieux. Once all the leaders were assembled in Constantinople, the emperor again had to ensure their loyalty. The greatest problem, however, was that Bohemond and Raymond both desired to become the commander of the united army. Naturally, the two held each other in enmity. Raymond had also been reluctant to swear allegiance to Alexis Comnenus, but he was convinced by his comrades that it was for the best. In the spring of 1097, the forces moved from Constantinople to ready to battle the Turks, but they moved in separate divisions. No unified leader was actually elected. And to some extent, this two-army part is quite good, because when it ended up, they were about a day or so apart. So if they were ambushed by one group and couldn't continue moving, they kept messengers going back and forth. If the messengers didn't arrive, then the group that had lost contact with them retrace its steps and end up coming in to save the other group. This happens at Delorium, one of the only major set-piece battles of the First Crusade. Now, the sources for this is Religion and the Holy Roman Empire by Ferguson, Before France and Germany by Gary, The Oxford History of Medieval Europe by Holmes, The Papal Encyclopedia by Bunsen, The Capetian Kings of France, 987 to 1328 by Butler and Adams, French History, Volume 1 by Guizot, Barbarian Invasions by Delbruck, Early Germans by Todd, and The Rise and Fall of the Holy Roman Empire by Criswell. So I hope you enjoyed that, and as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out our merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.